Eddie, and it was sure good to see her here in church this morning. But you know, sometimes when you get to preach, they get hard to live with. So I thought we'd try to be a blessing to Sister Betty tonight and let Brother Dan preach to us for a little bit. Brother Dan, you come preach to us tonight.
Our scales don't sit around and get rusty, what I thought. The devil comes by and tells me that I'd never be able to preach again, and well, he worked me over good. But I have been working on something that I'd like to preach. 1 Kings chapter 21. I do appreciate Brother Danny letting me preach tonight. I come in last night and I said, I need a place where I can just wear myself out preaching. I've been sitting around that house so long and going back and forth to the hospitals. I've got a restless energy that I hadn't been able to just exhaust. And Betty been sick. We can't fight like we used to. And I used to get all my messages from her when she'd get mad at me. It's good outlines. 1 Kings chapter number 21. And it came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard, which was in Jezreel, hard by the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. And Ahab spake unto Naboth, saying, give me thy vineyard, that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it is near unto my house, and I will give thee for it a better vineyard than it, or if it seem good to thee, I will give thee the worth of it in money. Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid it me that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto thee. Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him, for he had said, I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. And laid him down upon his bed and turned away his face and would eat no bread. You know, there must be something. There must be something that stirs the heart of God about a determined, righteously stubborn man. Now you hear a lot of ladies say, I've got one stubborn husband. Well, God might take much delight in him than you do. Because there's a lot of men in the Bible that God writes about of this character. A man of convictions. A man of backbone. A man of grit. A man that'll just get a grip on it and hold on and not turn it loose. Texas slang, we might say, it's a man that's got guts. Or he's got grit. Or he drinks his coffee without cream. Or he wears cotton boxer shorts. Or he don't wear tennis shoes to work. Naboth looked at Ahab and he said, I will not give thee the inheritance because my fathers gave it to me. Now, that little phrase, I will not, just kind of climbed up on me that day, and I began to trace that little phrase down in the Bible, and the first person to ever use that I will not was God himself. God, the first time in the Bible, he's the one that uses this no-nonsense phrase, for in Genesis chapter 8, when God had smelled the sacrifice of Noah after the flood, he said, I will not curse again the ground anymore. I'd say he was a man of his word. He said, I will not do it. And he's never done it. I bet there's times he probably wanted to. But thus began the history of that, of those three little words, I will not, that runs all the way through the Bible. Ahab was standing before the king of Salem, and he said, I will not take a thread of shoe latches from you. He said, I will not take anything that is thine. Now that's a pretty good stubborn attitude to look at this world, isn't it? I'll not take nothing from you. Then Eleazar, the servant of Abraham, when he went out seeking a bride for Isaac, when he stood before Laban, he said, I will not eat until I've told you my errand. And that proves he wasn't a Baptist. Because a Baptist is going to eat first and then tell you why he's there. Jacob was wrestling with an angel and he said, I will not let thee go until you bless me. The servant was bound to his master, but was allowed to go free. Probably walked to the door and turned around and he said, I love my master and I will not go free. Hannah looked at her husband and said, I will not go up until Samuel is weaned. David was in a cave with the opportunity to kill his enemy and he said, I will not touch God's anointed. Uriah, one of David's mighty men in his army, said, I will not do this thing. Elijah told Elisha when he told him to tarry here in Jericho today, and Elisha replied to him, I will not leave thee. David, speaking to Onan when the plague threatened the death of all Israel, said, I will not take anything from thee that costs me nothing. Jesus said to the disciples on the eve of Calvary, I will not leave thee comfortless. Paul to the prideful church at Corinth said, I will not glory but in my infirmities. And thus that little stubborn phrase seems to run through the Bible, and God makes mention of it often in the lives of men who will just look at the situations and circumstances and just say, I will not. And so now we have one more that I'd like to preach on, where Naboth is speaking to the king about his inheritance. And he said, I will not give thee my inheritance. Naboth's father and his sons had crossed over Jordan into the promised land with Joshua. And they crossed over ready armed, willing and ready and able to fight. When they crossed over Jordan and came into the Canaan land and their inheritance laid before them, they had to defeat all those evil kings, all those evil nations that had built those tribes throughout the land. And with much sacrifice and much bloodshed and with fighting and a heavy price, they defeated those kings off that land for their inheritance. They destroyed the enemy. And then they begin to develop that land. They took that land and they begin to plow those fields. They begin to pull up those stumps. They begin to take out those rocks. And they took that land that was nothing but just raw heathen land. And they begin to turn it into vineyards and turn it into fields and turn it into productive land. They poured their life into that inheritance that was theirs. They poured their blood into it. They began to plant vineyards and crops for themselves and their families. And that inheritance that they had worked so hard for, to fight to get it, and in labor to clear it off, it became an inheritance for their family and their tribe that they passed on from generation to generation, from descendant to descendant. That land and all their labor became the inheritance of Naboth and those that was to come. Though Naboth and those people of this generation, they had never worked to clear that land. They had never labored for it. They never had to sweat for it, nor did they have to fight, nor did they ever bleed for it. But they were expected to keep the inheritance that their fathers had fought and died and labored for. And the stories of the sacrifice had passed on from generation to generation to generation. And to sell or trade that inheritance would be an abomination to any generation that would trade off the inheritance that had been passed down to them at such a sacrifice. To surrender what their fathers and their sons had died for was totally out of the question. And so here we have Ahab. Ahab suddenly steps up and he desires Naboth's inheritance. The father had left him something of value, rich in history, rich in wealth, because the fathers had wanted the children to have something of value and something that was wealthy. Now Ahab desires Naboth's inheritance. And the commandments had said the inheritance was not to be removed, not through marriage, not through trading, nor through selling. And to Naboth, there was nothing better in all of his belongings. There was nothing he cherished more than the inheritance that his fathers had given. He finds him walking in his vineyard, walking amongst his inheritance. And Naboth was probably one of those kind that just used to go out among that inheritance and stand in the middle of it and begin to think about all the sacrifice and look in the corners of those fields where men had suffered and men had bled and men had died to give up their life and for that land that was now his. And he stood there and marveled and thanked God for his inheritance that had been passed down to him. But the contention of Ahab was he wanted it. He wanted Naboth's inheritance. He grew angry. He plotted, schemed, revenge, to kill, to murder, to pout, to cry. Whatever it was going to cost Ahab, he wanted Naboth's inheritance. You know, if you've got anything of value in this world, somebody wants it. You got anything of value, there's somebody that wants that which you value. The corruption of Ahab was that to think what Ahab had. He had the palace. He had the throne. He had servants. He had power. He had wealth. He had everything he needed. He didn't need nothing else. He surely didn't need Naboth's vineyard. Not with all that he owned. But he wanted it. What are you going to do with it? Go turn it into a garden of herbs. Oh, how insane. How insane. You see, a vineyard to those Jews, to those... It produced wine, and wine represents joy. And wine represented something that would relieve those burdens. And he's going to take that which produces joy and that which relieves burdens, and he's going to take it and turn it into herbs. And I tell you, that's exactly what they're trying to do to the inheritance of God today. And Ahab, he wants that vineyard, he wants that inheritance. And you would think that he wouldn't have a problem in getting it. But he runs into a problem. He runs into Naboth's determination. That's what he runs into. And Naboth, he's rude to the point where he said, I will not give this. Hey, sometimes you're going to have to be rude to keep what you got. I mean, you got to be downright rude to this world. I mean, he's talking to the king. This ain't some low subject. This ain't some nobody. This is somebody of power. He said, I'm not going to give it to you. I don't care what it costs. I will not. He denies the king and he refuses the king. God forbid that I should give it to you. This is something that my fathers gave me and I am not going to part with it. Naboth knew that if he sold it, he knew that if he traded it, and he knew that if he lost it, that he'd leave the next generation with nothing. He knew his children would have nothing if he lost it. He knew that he would ruin his name and his family and his testimony if it was his generation that lost that inheritance. Not for what it had been through, not for what it had cost, for all that inheritance in that land, the bloodshed and all that had happened in that land, for him to lose it, he'd rid his family of the inheritance. He'd curse his family lineage forever. He'd put out the light for his children if he was to lose his inheritance. So it's recorded in history that Naboth became a man who would not give up his inheritance. Not much is written about him, but not much needs to be written about a man that's got that said about him. That'll tell you all about Naboth's life. I'm not going to give you my inheritance. He lived in the past with his decision. Because he made his present decision on what had happened, what his fathers had done. I'm going to make my decision today. I'm not going to give it to you because my fathers died for it. My father bled and sacrificed for this a long time ago, and I'm not giving it to you today. He lived in the past for his fathers. But he also lived in the present for his children. Because he didn't want to give up his inheritance and leave his kids with nothing. And he lived also in the future for his descendants. Our actions and decisions today affect our future. Did you know when you run those verses back, it ends up back yonder where it says, visiting the iniquities of the fathers unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me? Did you know that a decision today can show up in future generations? A decision today will show up in the third and fourth generation. My testimony, my daddy got saved back on in an old orphan's home in Dallas, Texas, and that old man Buckner had built that Buckner's orphan's home, laid his hands on my daddy and began to pray for him. And hey, I'm telling you, you can make a decision that will affect your children and grandchildren. Your decisions affect the past. Our decisions affect the present, and our decisions affect the future. But no man lives to himself, no man dies to himself. Naboth, the danger of the inheritance that Naboth had. Did you know it was the inheritance that Naboth had that made him a marked man? His inheritance is what exposed him to danger. It's not the fact of who he was. It wasn't the fact of what his ability was. That wasn't the question. The question was he had an inheritance. And the inheritance made him a marked man. And you and I wonder sometimes why in the world we go through what we go through. It's not because of who we are or what we are. We've got an inheritance. And there's the Ahabs in this world want our inheritance, and it makes everybody who has one a marked man. The madness of Ahab, as long as Naboth possessed his inheritance, Naboth wanted it. Wanted to buy it, wanted to trade for it, he'd plotted for it, he'd kill for it. But Naboth's piety and devotion to his father's inheritance hastened his suffering. As long as he held on to that inheritance, it was going to hasten trouble. As long as he kept a grip on it, wasn't going to give it up, it was going to bring trouble. It was going to bring suffering. You take somebody, and I'm running ahead of my message, but you take somebody that just reaches out there with stubborn, righteously stubborn grit and grabs a hold of this thing and said, I ain't turning loose of it. You better hang on. Because there's somebody worse than Ahab wants that inheritance. Say, why do some people suffer more than others? I don't know, maybe they got a grip on a little tighter. As long as Naboth's piety and devotion to his father's inheritance, that was what caused his injury. That's what brought on the jealousy and anger of Ahab. It produced enemies that he never knew he was going to have. Just because he inherited. The last person that Naboth ever thought he would have trouble with would be the king. But you'll be surprised at what your inheritance raises up in the heart of other people. Naboth's inheritance cost him his life. He died because of his inheritance, but he died righteous. He died holding on to his inheritance, and it was still in his hand when he met the Lord. He had it in his hand when he crossed over to that other side. He died ruined. His reputation was ruined. They had spread so many rumors about him, and they didn't even give him a chance to clear himself, didn't give him a chance to speak for himself, didn't give him a chance to defend his name, and people believe rumors. So he died with his reputation shot, but he still had his inheritance. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I'll repay. What happens to those who hate other people's inheritance? What happens to those who will destroy the righteous with lies? Long after Naboth was gone, long after Naboth went into heaven, the dogs of hell licked blood Ahab up. Naboth never surrendered his inheritance. Never did. We have a heavenly Father. Our heavenly Father sent His Son to acquire for you and I an inheritance. Jesus Christ came into this world, defeated a king on a hill called Calvary. Went to Calvary, and the Bible said, destroyed the works of the devil. The battlefields of Golgotha, he bruised the serpent's head, he pulled the stinger out of death, and robbed the grave of its victory. Got you and I salvation. Got you and I eternal life planted for you and I church and a Bible. I'm saying he left you and I an inheritance. Jesus, the Son of God, was sacrifice and blood. You know, it's hard to believe that if you got a desire down inside your heart tonight to pray and come to church and love God and enjoy the services, that desire was bought and paid for by a sacrifice of blood on a hill a long time ago. You wasn't born with it. It was brought in. He acquired it for us. He died to give you and I that. Thorns and nails and scourging and crosses and lies and scornings and judgment. With a head full of thorns and hands full of nails and a back full of scourges and feet full of nails. With fighting and a heavy price, he acquired an inheritance that you and I enjoy tonight. He plowed the land up with his gospel. Planted the world with the seeds of grace. poured lives into that inheritance, perspired blood and fought and died to keep it for us. We are the descendants that have the inheritance. We are a generation that has that inheritance, an incorruptible, undefiled, that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven. Now, Ahabs of this world want it at any price. They want it. Oh, my God, do they want it. They'll bargain for it. They'll trade for it. They'll swap you for it. They'll plot your ruin. They'll ruin you. Anything that they can to get that inheritance. The devil says, all this world I'll give you if you'll just fall down and worship me. But like Nabal, there have been a lot of men and a lot of women that just stood willing to die, willing to suffer, stood willing to endure whatever hardness they had to go through, stood refusing to give up that inheritance. So the question is to you and I now, what is the inheritance that we, his people, have inherited? That we can lose. What is the inheritance that we will not give up? What is the inheritance that we're willing to suffer the loss of all things for? What is the inheritance that we're willing to die for? What is it? The Ahabs of this world want to take it away. What are those inheritances? Is Jesus Christ. He is our inheritance. He's an inheritance. And the world hates that name. You don't realize how much the world does hate that name tonight. I watch all the politicians. They get up and they speak a lot of religious talk. They say a lot of good things. And they talk a lot about God, but you can't hear many of them even mention that name. I thank God for the faith that our president has. I thank God for the faith he talks about in that Bible. And I thank God for the fact that he said, I want people to lift me up in prayer. And he told the whole nation that. And he said a lot of good things about God. And I understand where he's at. But he could not stand in front of this nation and say, Jesus Christ is our only hope. They wouldn't let him. They don't want to hear that name. They don't want to see that name. They don't want to read that name, and what they want to do is change that name. They let you talk about Yahweh. Talk about Yahweh. Just don't have a ring like Jesus does. They let you talk about Allah. They let you call him Buddha. My God, don't say Jesus Christ in public. The world wants to bury it so deep in religion that you can't find it. They want to bury it so deep in education you can't believe it. They want to bury it so deep in science you can't hear it. They want to bury it so deep in the politics that you can't find it. But we're the people of his inheritance. And there's some of us that are still going to preach it. And there's some of us that still want to speak it. There's some of us that still want to sing it. There's some that still want to spread it all over the place. That's our inheritance. We're going to tell the world that at the name of Jesus Christ, every knee's going to bow one day. Every knee, every tongue's going to confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. It's going to be like the apostles. The inheritance that Jesus passed on to him, said, boys, you go into all the world and preach the gospel. It ain't but a couple of chapters later when it said they were hauled in before the Sanhedrin. And they said, speak no more in this name. The scourging they received and the suffering that they endured and the shame and the pain that they faced, their replies was, we will obey God, not man. And for what he's done for us, for us not to speak that name in public, For what he's done, for where he come and found us, for what he's done for us, for where we're at tonight, what we have, for us not to mention that name, is treason against heaven. That's an inheritance that this generation is losing. They're losing it. There's another inheritance that we have that can be lost. That's the peace of God. The peace of God is an inheritance. Jesus said, "My peace I leave with you." You know how there's a woman over in 2 Samuel chapter 20? And there was a rebel by the name of Sheba. Sheba had rebelled against King David and he fled, and Joab and his men began to chase him. And this rebel named Sheba fled into this city called Abel. And when he fled into that city, he probably went into that city and he found a place to hide. And Joab and his troops knew that this rebel was in this city. So if you read the story, when they come against the city, they begin to batter the walls. They begin to batter the walls as if it's going to knock it down. The Bible said there was a wise woman. A wise woman. And this wise woman come outside the city walls and she come up to Joab and she said, "What are you doing? Beating down the walls, disturbing the peace." And here's what she said. "I am a..." In Israel, why swallow up the inheritance of the land? Why are you battering down the walls? Why all this fighting? Joab says the rebel Sheba is hiding in your city. And so the wise woman goes back into the city and finds this little rebel and cuts his head off. Peace is a rare inheritance. And you're going to have to fight to keep it. And there's sometimes you're going to have to cut off, and chug over the wall. If you're going to keep peace. Oh, we don't believe that no more. We love the peace of God so much that if anything tampers and anything threatens our peace, we're liable to just get a little angry. We won't part with our peace and inheritance. We'll fight and die to keep it. And you're going to have to fight and die to keep peace. In this life, you won't have to in the next one, but you're going to have to here. There's another inheritance. And it's called the place of worship, which is the church. The church is our inheritance. We didn't fight for it. We didn't die for it. It's been given to us from previous generations. What we have today has been paid for a long time. And if you and I don't pay the price to keep it in our generation, they won't have no church. I'm talking about a public place to come and assemble. I know what the church is. You want to get us in a fighting mood and get our dander full, stirred up and see us turn our plows back into swords and just mess with our church. That ought to be your attitude. Do you know how valuable a church is? Do you know how important a church is? Did you know half of us would be locked up in a mental place if it wasn't for the church? If I didn't have this place to come to, I would have lost my mind. Mess with our place of worship. Get a little hot. Mess with our preaching and we'll get a little angry. Mess with our altars. Mess with our songs and singing. Well, I'm going to call your names. Liable to preach against you. liable to pray, try to pray down the wrath of God on you. David was bringing up the ark, which represented the presence of God in that Old Testament. They were bringing it down a bumpy road, and it hit a bump, began to rock. There was a boy by the name of Uzzah that reached out there to lay his hands on that ark to steady it. He got the wrath of God stirred up, and God just killed him. That ark didn't need nobody to steady it. And the church represents the presence of God. This is God's place. This is the Lord's house. And it's been on a bumpy road for a long time. And it hadn't fallen over and it hadn't fallen out. And it don't need you to steady it. You need it to steady you. You reach out there and try to steady the church, and I'm telling you, you're liable to get the wrath of God stirred up on you. God don't need nobody to steady his church. It's our inheritance. Then there's the precious blood of Christ. That's an inheritance. That's an inheritance. Can I tell you, heaven bidded for our soul one day when we were without strength, far away from God. So weak in sin, heaven bidded for us. And the Lord offered up tears and strong crying unto heaven. And heaven looked down and saw the tears and heard the crying. And heaven looked down upon the Son of God and said, that's not enough. That's not enough. The Son of God offered up miracles of healing. He offered up healing of legs and tongues and ears and of different diseases. He offered up the power of healing unto heaven. Heaven saw the power that was in all that healing. And heaven said, that's not enough. He offered up unto heaven the good deeds that he performed. He helped father's sons and mother's daughters. He fed the multitudes that didn't have enough to eat. He offered up all them good deeds to heaven. Heaven looked down and said, not enough. That's not enough. He offered up the sweat and agony of Gethsemane. And heaven looked down and saw it all and said, I'm sorry. That's not enough. He offered up a thorn-beaten brow. Well, they had run thorns down upon that brow and beat it with a reed. The blood was oozing out of his scalp. He offered up a thorn-crowned head. With all the suffering and all the pain, heaven looked down and said, not enough. It's not enough. He offered up his face with his beard plucked out. Well, they'd reached up there and grabbed that beard and plucked it out and left the scars and the ripped flesh. And heaven looked down at that agony upon that face with that plucked out beard. Heaven said, not enough. It's not enough. You know, he opened up those hands and those nails run into those hands. The splitting of that flesh and those hands. And heaven looked down at the agony of those hands with those nails in it. And heaven said, it's not enough. He offered a back that had been scourged and ripped open, sliced open, with the meat protruding. He offered it up unto heaven, and heaven said, that ain't enough. He offered his feet with all the spears in his side and the nails in his feet. Heaven said, not enough. That blood began to ooze out his head, and that blood oozed out his back, and that blood oozed out his hands, and that blood oozed down those legs, and down that cross, and on that ground, and heaven said, that's enough! That's enough! I'll tell you, the inheritance we have tonight is the precious blood of Christ that bought us, and paid for us, and cries for us, yonder at that mercy seat, and keeps us clean so that we can pray. and have a desire for God. We'd be nobody without that blood. Our fathers gave us this inheritance. All that we have tonight was given to us. You hadn't suffered for it. You hadn't paid no price for it. Ain't no sense in bragging about it. It's given to you from past generations. Christ brought it, and other generations have given it to us. It's ours. If we're not careful, we can lose it. Piano player, I got one. Our inheritance is going to be kept by raw determination. I know it's going to take grace. I understand that. But it's going to take some determined people to keep what's been given to us, passed down to us. It's going to take some I will nots. I will not. I will not turn loose. I will not give up. I will not go back. I will not do that. I will not do this. That's what it's going to take. And it's going to bring you suffering and it'll bring you danger. All inheritances do. Inheritance. It's going to make you a marked man, a marked woman. It's going to mark your home. It's going to mark your children. Previous generations, history records it all. It's not a hidden fact. Somehow in our generation, we think we need not suffer for the inheritance. It is given to us. John said, be thou faithful unto death. And tonight ought to be a determination down in the depths and the heart of every one of us. I will not. You can join the stubborn ranks of men and women in the Bible and let history write your records saying, I will not. I will not leave my church. I will not do it. I'll not leave my wife. I will not leave my husband. I will not leave my pastor. I will not leave my home. I will not leave my Bible. I will not. It takes determination. Old-fashioned, raw determination. You can pray about it all you want. I'm going to tell you, I've learned sometimes you just going to have to reach out there and get it. You got to get it. Would you bow your heads with me? We're going to stand in just a minute and sing. I'll give you an opportunity before we try to sing you down to the altar. If you'd come and renew your determined life and heart. To be faithful to church takes determination. Be faithful to the Word of God takes determination. Much determination. To be a faithful mother and a faithful wife, faithful husband, faithful father. It takes determination. And when things go wrong, stay determined. Inheritance is going to bring enough trouble.
Let's all stand. Hymn number 5.
Number 5. Come as you sing.